This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 288 of the Stacey West podcast. You may not recognize my voice, but many moons ago I used to be a regular presenter. My name is Gary and I am now back from the tropical paradise of Mauritius. I am joined by somebody today who is currently residing in the tropical paradise of rugby, and that's Chris Lamming. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, very well. Impossible not to be well at the moment, I think, isn't it, as a Lincoln City supporter? I wouldn't say it's a tropical paradise right here, though. It's just started raining.
Has it?
Yeah. But welcome back.
Oh, no. It's blazing sunshine there. It's been warm. You can see, I mean, nobody else can see, obviously, but you can see that it's so sunny. My beard is bright white on the thing, and Flea's just about to mow the lawn. So I hope the rain's not coming our way.
Well, maybe we'll have to get this done quickly so you can get it done in time.
Well, no, I'm not going to do the lawn. I don't care.
Fair enough. Good point.
I haven't actually mowed the lawn since my back operation. We used to take it in turns, and I had a back operation, obviously, in 2018 now. And V started doing the lawn, and now she just always does it. But there's a reason for it. And I know that there are some people who listen who are lawn aficionados. So I'm about to send Andy Pearson into an absolute meltdown. But when I mow the lawn, I prop open the thing at the back where the grass comes out and mow. And the grass goes all over the lawn and I leave it there to decompose on the lawn, because what's the point in raking it all up? Whereas Fee will do one strip and she'll take the little bag off, take it over, dump the bag somewhere, put the bag back on, do another strip. Oh, Jesus, it'd be more tedious than watching Stevenage every week. No, I can't be doing any of that.
I agree with you 100%, by the way.
Good. Thank you.
Again.
Shocker.
Shocker, indeed. Just quickly, just off air, you were searching for something and I heard you shout to Fee, you're looking for whatever he was looking for. And you said, I haven't even looked for it. I just asked you. And that's just funny because I do exactly the same. So I'll ask Steph where something is. And she goes, oh, have you looked in so-and-so place? Have you looked in so-and-so place? No, I haven't looked at all. I know you know where it is. I know I don't know. So of course, I haven't even bothered looking. I'm just going to ask you. So it was just quite funny that we both did the same thing.
At home, I partially become Charlie in that I am blind to things. So I can be walking around the house and see something 10 times a day. And then when I want it, not know where it is. The dongle, that was what I was looking for, our mobile internet dongle, in case we have a problem while we're recording. And it's on the telly stand by the telly, where it has been since the last time I did a podcast and I had to sit in the living room. That's where it's been the whole time. So every time I've been sitting watching telly, it's there. You can see it. And the second I'm here going, right, where's the dongle? I'm looking around my computer desk and thinking, well, it's not on here. So if it's outside of my initial field of vision, and when I first want something, that's it. Then I just go, well, Phil know where it is, because she's probably put it away or moved it or something like that. So
yeah,
anyway.
Exactly the same. Exactly the same. It just looks quite funny.
So anyway, my last podcast, I think, or certainly my last game prior to Leighton Orient was 0-0 against Stevenage at the beginning of the month. Have I missed anything?
Not a lot, mate. No, you and I did that podcast right after the Stevenage game, and we both quite confidently put paid to our playoff hopes. Yeah. How wrong were we?
Isn't karma a saint? People say karma's a bitch. I love it. I am actively predicting us to fall out of the top six. And then at the end of the season, when we've fallen out the top six, go to the playoff semi-finals, get beat 5-0 home and away in the semi-finals, and then go to Wembley and fail miserably. So, yeah, that's my prediction. Absolutely. Yeah, so quite a bit has happened while I've been away. You've all covered that so very well, I'm sure. And yesterday, you and I agree normally on everything, or on 99% of things you and I agree. We didn't agree yesterday in Gwyn's on our individual state of minds, did we? Because
no, not at
you
all.
Were nervous.
I was. Yeah, I got more and more nervous the closer the game got. I remember going after this directly after the Bristol Rovers game with your dad into the pub in Rugby after the game. Obviously, on a high after another fantastic performance, another ridiculous scoreline. But of course, Ethan Arahan picked up a red card. And both me and your dad at the time said, oh, it's fine. Ted will sit in there for one game. We can get by with one game with Ted sitting in there. Not a problem at all. And then the closer I got to Leighton Orient, the more significant that became in my mind. The fact that they've had almost 2 weeks to prepare for this. You know, it's not like they've been a game every Tuesday, every Saturday, where you've only got a couple of days to prepare for the upcoming fixture. They've had 10 days or so to prepare for this. So, yeah, those two things combined, plus the fact that we've had that gap, and sometimes that does stall your momentum a little bit. I just, yeah, kind of discounted the positives and kind of all the reasons I had to kind of make myself feel comfortable directly after the Bristol Rovers game. And all of the kind of the questions, I suppose, kept coming bigger and bigger in my mind from that point. And I was going into this game terrified, to be honest, absolutely terrified. Whereas you were very much the opposite, weren't you?
Yeah, I was laid back. I was chilled with it because, and I've said this in my write-up, so apologies if it's repeating, but there's a country song, obviously, that I like, which is Me and Bobby McGee by Kris Kristofferson, also covered by Janis Joplin. Very different kind of feel to it. But anyway, there's a line in that that says, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. And for me, when you're outside the playoffs, you haven't been in the playoffs, you haven't lost anything, you've got almost like a freedom. And that was how I felt, that I've always believed that there is potential for us to get in the playoffs, but I've never felt in my heart that it's something that we would absolutely achieve. We're six games from the end of the season, but we are in the playoffs right now. I don't think it's hard to say, because I've been saying how it's possible the whole time. If you ask me honestly, truthfully, did I think that we would get there up until I went away to on my honeymoon? Probably not. But then those three results made me think, well, maybe. But we never had it to lose. So if we didn't get there, you'd go, wow, we've given it a really good go. You know, we're 13 unbeaten. We've won, I don't know off the top of my head, what, 7 of the last 9, something like that. And so I was pretty chill with it. And you know, without jumping too far ahead, that was proven to be the wrong state of mind. Because as soon as Oxford scored, bear in mind, we hadn't gained anything because everybody was still drawing. But as soon as the gap started getting bigger and not smaller or staying the same, all of a sudden I felt what you feel. All of a sudden I felt that kind of, oh no, because we were losing ground. So at that point, we're losing something. It might not sound sensible to other people. It might not be obvious to other people what I mean by that, but I know what I mean by that.
I know what you mean by that. I think I felt that because of the fact that we were only 2 points behind Oxford going into this game and we have them to play. Albeit they had the advantage, the fact that we had them to play, in my mind, felt that we still had something to lose already. Yeah. So that's probably was another factor as to kind of where my nerves came from. And I have to admit, I thought, I love the fact that it was a sellout at Lincoln at Central Bank. It's just a sight to behold, isn't it? The atmosphere was great, but there was a bit of a nervous energy there as well, understandably so. And yeah, the game kind of followed that mentality a little bit, I think. That's just how it transpired to me because I felt nervous.
I don't feel the weight of expectation, and maybe that's it. I think you go back to Dan and Nick, right? There was the weight of expectation when you're top of the National League to be promoted. then the next season we were expecting to be in the playoffs. We were, no matter what anybody says about consolidation, we went into League Two expecting to be in the playoffs. We got there on the final game of the season, but there was that weight of expectation. The following year, it's the title. Do you know what I mean? Then under the, in the Michael Appleton era, when we were all watching at home on telly, we were top. We were expecting to be promoted. And the weight of expectation is extremely heavy. When you haven't got that on, as a supporter, I find it a little bit easier. And I wonder if that might even kind of go across to the players a little bit.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
Anything to lose.
Yeah, you know? I don't think I've ever felt expectant at any point here. I do agree that there's an absence of that expectation, which probably gives us an element of freedom. I think what it is now is, from a fan's perspective, we've got something to lose now, as you said earlier. And that's what kind of creates that nervousness. But there's not an expectation, I don't think. I certainly haven't felt expectant. Even I'd be honest, I think we're going to get in the playoffs. I now do think we're going to finish sixth. I don't think it's going to be easy between now and the end of the season. And even though I think all the evidence suggests that we should be finishing sixth, so we probably will, I still don't expect us to. I know that we can. I know that we should. I still can't bring myself to expect it. But I'm nervous because we've got something that we didn't think was possible at the moment to hang on to. And I think that just ramps up the pressure and there's just a fear, I suppose, from us. I think the players are playing fearlessly, to be honest. But I think from a fan's perspective, there's an element of nerves there now that there wasn't before.
I mean, very quickly, I think the word expectation in this instance has two meanings. Because you're saying you don't expect it. And I think that can play into the entitlement that people go that, you know, we should be sixth. We expect to finish sixth. I don't feel that. But when you're the team that's in the final playoff place with six games to go and your goal difference is as good as it is, there is an expectation that that's where you'll be without it being the entitlement expectation. There is a kind of you're in the driving seat. It's up to you now. And this is the first time since the Michael Appleton years where that has been the case, whereas finishing in the top six is up to us. And to a degree, you know, the 2020-21 season, I go on about that as if it was some sort of, you know, brilliant world-beating season. Actually, we were pretty poor from February through to May. Otherwise, we would have gone up automatically.
Yeah, we lost what we were hanging on to, really. You know, we had automatics, and then we fell away from that. And I think that's what gives me a little bit of extra confidence, is that all the teams around us they're not on poor form, apart from Stevenage, but they're not on good form. They're an inconsistent form. Everyone around us is inconsistent, and we're the team in form. And there's six games left yet, so that's enough time for someone to put a run together and build some momentum. But we're there now. And I feel, you know, all we've got to do now is we've just got to equal everyone else's results. We haven't got to better them anymore. And I think we can still. And I think that is a real... that's a huge shift in mentality to have that. And I just hope, I really hope that gives us confidence rather than gives us fear. I think I have confidence in the fact that Michael Skubala has the right mentality in the squad to be able to allow us to continue on the form that we have, in regards to just the mentality side of the game. But in terms of that energy that comes from the crowd, I just wonder if that turns more nervous now. And I hope that doesn't transpire onto the players. I really hope they can continue to play with that, the kind of freedom and confidence that they have been primarily over the last few weeks.
Obviously, we're going to come on to the game in a minute, but just looking at some of our promotion challenges, fellow promotion challenges. Jordan Rhodes, as I understand it, not due to play now for Blackpool till the end of the season. I think he's injured.
That's rather significant, yes.
Which is massive, and I will double check that because I saw a headline before we came on air, and it's hugely, hugely unprofessional of me to check it before we come on air. But I mean, obviously, Jordan Rhodes was massive for them. Blackpool were the one team that I think for a while we all thought might be the ones that we have to look out for. He was forced off when they lost 1-0 at Wigan on the 16th, and as I read it, won't play again. Oxford, it's up to us. If we go to Oxford, we get the win there, then there's a gap open up. And Stevenage, I'm not convinced, are now viable playoff candidates anymore. And I might be wrong. Stevenage have got the ability to close games down and it works really well for them. I'm not sure in over a six-game period they've got the it's a mini season, and I'm not sure that Stevenage have got the tactical knowledge to be able to do what they need to do over six games by switching it up. They're a one-trick pony, and that's great. And it's similar, really, to what we were, I think, under Keith, to a degree in that first season. Solid, hard to beat, pinch a goal. This is different. You've got six games to go. This isn't like a normal Football League season. You've got six games. We can. Yesterday's game, which we're going to talk about, was poor. It was a poor game of football. And if that's in August and you scrape a last-minute winner against a team like Leyton Orient who have sussed you out, you're going, phew, what does this mean for the season? And you've got six games to go. You're thinking, that's 3 points. We've done what we need to do. Everything's positive. Let's move on. I don't think Stevenage have got the ability to win a six-game mini-league, because all they'll do is shut up shop. They'll be able to get draws against Bolton, but then they can only do that against Carlisle as well. I think Oxford do have, but I'm not convinced at the moment that Des Buckingham is happy working with Liam Manning's players. And I think that shines through. I think Blackpool without Jordan Rhodes is basically like a tiger without its front teeth a little bit. I said to my dad, I wouldn't actually be surprised if Lincoln City don't finish fifth.
It's mad, isn't it? I was just about to say the same thing, almost tongue in cheek. Saying, oh, we'll just go and close down fifth then. But we've closed 15 points down to get ourselves into the position we're in now. What's another seven, eh?
Yeah, exactly. Especially the way Barnsley are playing. I mean, I had a look at the Barnsley Twitter feed after their game yesterday, and their fans are saying, Collins out, we haven't recruited well into January, we haven't done this, we haven't done that. And there's negativity there. That's brilliant, because that was what our problem was in 2020-21. Was there was negativity around it. We were losing games. The turning point for me, I think we went to Plymouth and lost 4-3, and we'd come back from behind. Yeah, we'd gone 3-2 up. And there was the two missed penalties against Doncaster when I think we lost 1-0 and should have really won 2-1. And those were two moments. And fans were kind of then getting a little bit edgy and nervous. And you said it a minute ago. Nervous energy is not a good energy sometimes to have. And I actually think it works in our favour that we have four away games left and not two. Because when you go away, nervous energy isn't as evident from the crowd. 10,000 supporters, you might have 3,000 or 4,000 nervous. You might, you know, you've got those kind of partisan away support, all that sort of stuff. You go away, you take 500 to Carlisle, they've been on the beer all day. Nobody cares about the nervous energy. They're there, you know, win, draw or lose, we're only here for the booze. Same with Reading, same with Cheltenham. So I think it could work in our favour. Anyway, 16 minutes in, we don't need to pad, really, do we? You mentioned about Ethan Arahan missing yesterday. And I think the narrative of the Leyton Orient game really should actually start with Leyton Orient, because they won the tactical battle. Michael Skubala didn't have a lot of options in midfield. The game was won, and the game could have been won and lost in midfield. We had three players that I think are technically very good, but you would in your mind have them as CAMs or most central attacking midfielders. If you, in a best way, you can't even describe any three of them as box to box midfielders. Not really. Maybe Ted Bishop. Richie Wellens knew that, stuck four in the middle of the park and just suffocated the game.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Leyton Orient in the first half in how they stopped us playing. So they played a diamond, a 4-4-2 diamond midfield, which they haven't done really at all. I think once they've done that this season, haven't they?
So they haven't done it.
There you go. Great knowledge to know that, by the way. How did you know that?
But, 24 minutes against Cheltenham.
There you go. But yes, they played four central midfielders against our three. Moylan, Mandrew and Bishop hardly touched the ball in the first half. And Orient had by far the better of that first period. They pressed us really high. Normally that suits us because we're good at playing through and out teams, but we just couldn't really string things together. And I think that was not because we were specifically poor. I just think it was because Leyton Orient were good. And I have to say, in the first half against Stevenage, they played the same system. They're not as good a team on the ball as Leyton Orient are, but they played that diamond midfield. And we did struggle to get out in that first half, though we did create a few more chances against Stevenage than we did against Orient. Actually, the Orient are just a much better team than Stevenage are. They've got more to them. But yeah, I don't want this to come across as a negative and a criticism of us. Firstly, it's impossible for us to maintain the level of performance that we have in the last three games prior to Leyton Orient. But this was more about Orient had done their homework and they were good at it, and credit to them. But bar an effort from Darren Prattley, which Lucas Jensen turned over, which I actually thought was a far bigger chance than most people around me did, because he hit it high down the middle. It was an easy save for Lucas Jensen, but all Prattley had to do was hit that ball low and it's a goal. So that was a huge opportunity for them, which they missed. But they didn't really create anything clear-cut, though they had the majority of territory, majority of possession, majority of the chances, despite nothing hugely clear-cut. But what they did do, which is something that no team has been able to do in the last month, is bar Stevenage, was stop us playing. And Ethan Arahan being absent, I think, definitely is a factor in that, because he is a class above and can find those areas in allowing us to create those passing lines to play out from deep. But also it's just credit to Orient for their organisation.
Yeah, I agree. We were stifled. Our XG over the course of the game was the second lowest of this run since we've lost to Blackpool on New Year's Day. The Blackpool XG, we were 0.27. There's only been one game where we've been below one since then, which was Charlton away. They did their job on us. I actually liked the lad, I can't think of his second name now, Jordan something or other, that came from Derby, that was playing eight for them. I think he was at the base of their midfield. I didn't think he was technically probably not a fantastic player. But every single time we tried to do anything through the middle at all, he was kind of the last line of defence before the defence. I thought the centre halves did really well for them. I thought Omar Beckles, yeah, everyone was moaning about him near me, which means that he did a decent job. And I thought there is an argument for saying that he had Ben House in his pocket a little bit. Bear in mind, this is a Ben House that missed a game through injury, that's kind of, you know, was coming back into the side. It was surprised to see him in. They just impressed me. But as I said in my write-up, they knew how to stop us playing, but they didn't have the plan to beat us. And their argument is, well, we've got three of our main centre forwards out injured, so blah, blah, blah. But we had three of our central midfielders out injured or suspended. And if we'd had those in, I think it would have been a little bit of a different game. So, you know, it was two teams that were kind of a little bit handicapped coming up against each other, but they had the best of it. And it was, if that game had been in August or September and we have that first half, the general narrative on social media is that we were woeful. We weren't. We would say the same in August if that happened. We wouldn't, you know, we would say, no, it wasn't woeful. This happened and that happened. But that, I think, would be the general consensus. And Joe Taylor's effort, which we'll come on to. I mean, at the time, I thought, oh, that's not far away.
Yeah, it's a terrible effort, isn't it? He's allowed that. I think he's allowed that after the amount of goals he scored recently. But it was that was our only real opportunity in the first half.
Yeah, it was.
And he shanked it, bless him. But
he shanked it.
He did. But we didn't create a great deal at all in that first half. And I think that's a really good point that you make. And I agree, unsurprisingly, I agree. But I think what's interesting is it's those intangibles about unity, connection between the fan base and the players and the management, the effort that you can see the players are putting in, the fact that they have a desire to try and make things happen, even if it doesn't always come off. I think there's a difference now, whereas historically there would have been a moan and a groan. There's now a support. And you'll forget, like, just an immediate forgiveness of Joe Taylor for missing a big opportunity like that. Like, if he hadn't scored yet, and he's on a run of games without, you know, we're on a run of games without scoring many goals. He hasn't scored for five or six. There's a very different atmosphere there. But the lads have earned that. The lads have earned that backing and that respect. And I think when Ben and I mentioned on Thursday, and you and I have spoken about this off air, about it just feels something very similar in terms of taking the actual football out of it, but just in terms of the whole club and the connection and the atmosphere and just the general feeling. It's very similar to the promotion winning season from the National League. And, you know, whether we get the outcome that we hope for or not, I think that connection is something that I haven't experienced since the Cowley era. And that wins you points, because in the moments where the crowd would normally turn, every other crowd that's on a normal run, it's human behaviour, isn't it? They turn, or it's a bit of a moan, a bit of a groan. And if there's an absence of that, and there's an air of positivity in the stadium, that gets you over the line. There's two things that really stick in my mind from that Cowley era that kind of proved that. There was the Chester at home, Tuesday night. The lads had played like 60 games up to that point, and it was an awful game of football. Like, it was rubbish. And we won 1-0. And I remember Danny Kelly came out at the end of the game and said, the lads were on their arse. like they were absolutely shattered, and it was the fans that got them through. And the, when we lost 4-0 at home to Crewe, and everyone was singing Danny and Nicky Cowley's name, and it was, the atmosphere was just as if we'd won 4-0. Well, that just doesn't happen, but it showed the connection that the club has and the unity that was in the club and the positivity there, and that gets you places. And there's an argument that that had a role to play yesterday, because the first, I'd say 35 minutes, Leighton Orient dominated the game. I think the last 10 minutes of the first half, we had a bit of spell, but we were more comfortable. And I actually thought second half, Orient didn't dominate at all. If anything, we had the better of the second half without creating anything hugely clear cut. I certainly felt like we were less threatened by Orient in the second half. I felt we were much more comfortable in the second half. But I don't think there's any doubt that we definitely didn't deserve to win the game. But at this time of the season, it's about results and it's about moments, isn't it? And
yeah,
we had one.
We did. Just to pick up on a couple of things, I remember that Chester game really well, because I actually think that was the game before the Easter break. I think it was the game before the Good Friday win against Torquay, because Alan Powell was sent off. And I had just checked that, but I remembered that. You're quite right. And it is all about moments. Before we come to the moment, the stats back up your assertion about a better second half marginally. XG, we were 0.343. Leighton Orient was 0.34. And when you think that one of those was the header from O'Neill, which, by the way, was only a 0.10 XG, and I thought that was a golden opportunity, their header on 75 minutes. But we also had better possession in the second half as well, 51%. We were better in the second half without deserving to win it. We didn't deserve to win it. It's that simple. We probably didn't really deserve to beat them when we beat them at their place either. Rorian can feel quite aggrieved at our two meetings. You know, I made the point that we've only actually led for 1 minute of normal time in nearly three full games against them.
But I
just wanted to pick up on two things, if I may.
You may.
Two players I want to pick up on. The first one, the player that started, who impressed me yesterday, who is not on a Hakeem Adelican redemption arc, but is on a redemption arc, who was getting rave reviews from people near me. That's Danny Mandroyou. Now, Danny Mandroyou, as we know, just for those, you know, if anyone's come to the party late, sent off for a bit of a silly challenge against Bolton, sent off for a really petulant, nasty challenge against Burton. Arguably, some people say that his actions were the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of Mark Kennedy's reign. You know, all sorts of insinuations from Mark Kennedy set a narrative around Danny Mandroyou. I think coming into the Christmas period, there was a feeling that he could move on in January. He's not a team player, which I don't think were accurate. Nobody knows whether somebody's committed, whether a team player or not. They guess and they take hints. I thought Danny Mandroyou yesterday was excellent, and he was only marginally off being my man of the match, because he's playing out of position. He has this image, this aura around him that he's a fancy damn player. He'll turn up when it's sunny and the ball's at his feet. But does he do it on a wet, windy night at Stoke and all that sort of rubbish, which we might get to find out next season? Who knows?
Don't get relegated.
Yeah, I was going to say one way or another. I really liked Danny Mandroyou yesterday. I saw him fly into one or two tackles that for a minute I'm thinking, oh no, Danny, not again. But he timed them right. He was winning the ball. He was putting himself about. He was playing safe football. He's not Ethan Rahan. He doesn't play that position on a regular basis. He doesn't play kind of a deeper midfield role on a regular basis. And he was dropping deep. He didn't get a lot of joy. You said that already at all. But I thought that he was really good. And we come on. So, do you want to pick up on Danny?
I do really, because there's a few things I'd like to pick up on there. Because firstly, yeah, I agree. I think it's been great since he's come into there, and to come through adversity that he's had to then come back into the team and take that chance with both hands. I just think he deserves an enormous amount of credit. And you say playing in an unnatural position, I agree with that as well. But I think that can become a natural position for him. I felt the criticism of Danny Mandroyou was harsh at the time, because I felt he's probably our best technical player in the squad. I still do think that. I think he's the player in the squad that has the best vision of anyone else. He sees passes that other players don't see.
More than Ted?
Yes, Ted's great on the ball and does see good passes. He certainly threads the ball through well. Ted's great at driving with the ball, though, committing players that way. I think Danny Mandrew just sees opportunities that other players don't see for passing. What, of course, we scored from when he set up Blass's assist against Barnsley. Some people would think that was just a clearance. Not a chance in hell, that's just a clearance. It's a perfectly weighted pass. He's seen that out of the corner of his eye. There was actually a moment in the first half, which I didn't think came to a lot, but it was a similar sort of situation. So he won the ball, but he's kind of passed the ball over his shoulder, a little reverse lofted pass for Joe Taylor to run onto, and no one else would see that pass. Most people would play it wide to Lasse Aronson in that situation. And I think there's always a place for someone in the team with that, providing they have the tactical discipline that goes along with it. And I think you can carry a player like that at times if they haven't. It's a bit of a luxury player, but you can't in the system that we play, when certainly with the out of possession expectations that are put on the players that Marcus Guebala puts on, and the aggressiveness that we press at, and how kind of together everyone has to be. Everyone has to be on the same wavelength with that. And the concern I had with Danny Mandjoyu was I couldn't see how his attributes would fit into this team in this style, despite the fact I felt he had attributes that would be beneficial for us to have on the pitch. I didn't think he had the tactical kind of awareness and ability, and of course maybe the tactical discipline, because we've seen him getting sent off a couple of times with some rash challenges, which is more about poor decision making than anything else. And then he's come in, played deeper, and looked like he's played there for his whole career, and he's been utterly superb. So yeah, I agree with you yesterday. I think he was great, but I think he's been great since he's come back into the team to play in that centre midfield role. And you know what? Centre midfield now. So Charlie and I just recorded our monthly YouTube show. So check that out, by the way, little plug. We've chosen our team of the month, sorry, and kind of what we'd like to see going forward. And both of us chose Arahan, Moylan and Mandrew, particularly Mandrew ahead of Bishop, which I think was a big statement. And I kind of made the point of saying, even with both Conor McGrandles and Ethan Hamilton fit, as mad as this thing's to say, I think I'd still prefer to have Moylan and Mandrew and Arahan as my midfield three right now because of how much they've impressed in the last handful of games.
Depends who we play him.
Of course it does, yeah. But I think that's never going to happen because the other two are out. And Moylan and Mandrew have only had their opportunity to play because McGrandles and Hamilton are out. But if you told me a month ago that our midfield three for the rest of the season is likely to be Mandrew, Moylan and Arahan, I wouldn't have been very comfortable with that at all. Whereas now I am completely comfortable with it.
It's like Ted and Mandroy are playing together, Ted and Danny playing together. I said they can't. It's like Lampard and Gerrard, and they've proven me wrong. And I love being proven wrong when I'm negative or when I say something that I think, like, it's brilliant. Look, moving on, there was another player I was going to mention. It's going to be really fleeting in this time because he didn't have a huge impact yesterday. But for me, he just helped us keep a grip in the game or get a further grip in the game, and that was Fred. Now, Freddie Draper is a player who I think is when we signed players in, when we brought the players back in the winter window, we said, look, not everybody's going to be a hit. And I think with respect to Fred, he's found it difficult. He's had the injuries, he's been in and out of the team, all that sort of stuff. But I thought when he came in, I thought he gave Beckles probably a real fight. It was once or twice where he kind of backed in and he drops around. And you know, there's no thought in my mind at all of Freddie Draper not being around the first team last season. But I just felt he gave them a little bit of something different to think about. And I think you want to pick up on one player before we move on to the magic moment, so to speak.
Indeed, yeah. Well, quickly on Freddie, I think he was good when he came on. Big fan of Freddie Draper. I think he's got a big future, but he hasn't settled quite as much as he'd like to. I think the desire when he came back in, was recorded in January, was probably for him to be a bit of a focal point as part of our starting lineup. And he has, mainly because of injuries, he hasn't had that opportunity to get a sustained run in the team. And other players, of course, have then taken their chance in the team. But when he came on yesterday against Orient, he offered a very different threat than the other two. And I think that is a real positive for the rest of the season as well, because and Jovan fits into this conversation. So Jovan, Freddie, Joe and Ben all have very different strengths. And it can be a bit horses for courses. I don't think there's a huge difference in the kind of the pecking order between them. There's a bit of one, but not a massive one. And I was really impressed with Freddie when he came on because his back-to-goal play was good. The ball seemed to stick just a little bit longer in their half, and it gave us a little bit of a platform to try and play. Again, without creating anything hugely clear-cut, we seemed to have a bit more control in their half of the pitch in the second half than we did in the first, particularly after Fred came on. So yeah, there's that. And I also just
quick question. Which of those players then is Tyler Walker's profile most like looking ahead to next season? Or is he a different? Is he a kind of a fifth? And bear in mind, I know Joe Taylor's alone, but is Walker a fifth, or is Walker a little bit like a Taylor, kind of a that kind of fox?
I think
in box?
Of the four, he's most similar to Taylor. I don't think he's as quick as Taylor, especially after his injuries. No. But in terms of, you know, Taylor's good presser, but isn't involved massively in link up. His main part of the kind of role in the team is to put the ball in the net, isn't it? Is to finish off chances, and I think that's Tyler's biggest attribute. So, yeah, there's a big question mark over Tyler, isn't it, for next season? That's probably something we'll discuss in more depth in pre-season. But as it stands right now, Joe Taylor is very much part of the first team squad and should be one of the first names on the team sheet. But the other player I wanted to just quickly mention was Lucas Jensen. Because
Super Lucas Jensen.
Super Lucas Jensen. So we mentioned before his strengths. He's just brilliant at goalkeeping, to stop any other team scoring goals. There's always that little moan and groan when he kicks one goal kick out every game into the throw-in. And, you know, I get it. It's not you want everyone to be perfect all the time, but it is literally one a game. And it was very windy yesterday as well. So it's difficult against a strong wind to do that. I just think I don't care if one goal kick goes out of play, if he is as commanding and as he is. So he made a really big save at 0-0. Low to his right yesterday, which saw that late as well because it came
very
through a really good save. And we mentioned before on Y Scout, there's a metric which ranks players kind of from best to worst or the top 30 using various metrics. And Lucas Jensen is now the number one goalkeeper in League One. But there's a particular metric which I checked out today, which blew my mind. Now, I knew he was top of this particular list. But the number here just absolutely astounded me. So there's a statistic on here called goals prevented. So how this has worked out is every shot on target that the team has faced compared to the actual goals that have been conceded. The XG of all the shots that have been on target compared to the actual goals conceded. And of course, the shots on target do directly rank goalkeepers, because the goalkeeper, they either go in the goal or the goalkeeper saves it. They're the only two options when it's on target. So a goalkeeper that has prevented a certain number of goals compared to the XG that they would be expected to concede against is a good barometer of how good the goalkeeper is at shot stopping. So I'll just tell you the top five. So fifth best for this is Liam Roberts of Barnsley. So he has prevented 3.84 goals this season. So if it wasn't for Liam Roberts, basically Barnsley would be almost four goals worse off than they are now. That could well have an impact on points returns. Joel Pereira of Reading is in fourth with 4.18 prevented. Max Crocombe of Burton is third with 4.38 prevented. And Nathan Baxter of Bolton is in second place, who has prevented 4.44 goals. Lucas Jensen is first. Go on.
None of those are lone keepers.
That's interesting.
Sorry, go on. Just ruined your big reveal, but go on.
You have really, yeah. Because So Nathan Baxter second on 4.44 goals prevented. So basically between four and five goals that Nathan Baxter has saved Bolton. Again, that can have an impact on results. Lucas Jensen is first, having prevented 9.13 goals. More than double anyone else in the league. Now, I'm sorry, I don't... He can kick 10 goal kicks out a game for me if he does that. He doesn't. Obviously, he's far better than that. And we generally try and pass out short, and he's been good at the decision-making with that. But in terms of traditional goalkeeper metrics, stop the ball going in the net, he has saved us 9 goals. That absolutely has won us points this season. And I'm going to say, I don't think he's a million miles away from player of the season for me.
Ooh. Ooh, that's quite a big call. That's quite a big call. I'm planning an article this week on Lucas Jensen.
Oh, are you?
For a similar sort of reason, because I think he's been excellent. I think he's a player who, you know, at the beginning of the season, you had a lot of people going, oh, I'm not too sure about this new goalkeeper. and he's been outstanding. Some of his shot stopping is brilliant. He made a great save yesterday, and I did the whole thing. I turned to Matt, who was a keeper as well, bear in mind, and went, "Well, it's his job, Matt, isn't it?" And he's like, "Yeah, but it's come through a crowd. It's late. If he doesn't save it, nobody looks at the keeper and goes, that's his fault." And I think that's the difference between a keeper stopping shots and a keeper being a good shot stopper. You know, if you stop a shot that you see coming and you dive and you palm it away, okay, that's your job. If you see something come through a crowd late and you're a 6'7" goalkeeper and within a second you're on the floor saving it, because he's a big lad, let's not forget that. You know, I know that sounds ridiculous for a keeper, but if you're 6'7", it's not as easy to get down as if you're 6'1", 6'2". You've got a more frame to get down. You've got another 5 inches to get down. And he's massively, massively impressed me. And the reason that I just ruined your big reveal is, for the last couple of seasons, we've had loan keepers in. We've had good loan keepers in. Carl Griffiths was brilliant. Alex Palmer was brilliant. Josh Griffiths had his moments. We've had good goalkeepers. And there was a belief in my mind that we go for the high-profile loan every time, because you ain't going to get a goalkeeper as good as those three, or certainly as good as two of those, playing football for your team. Lucas Jensen is as good as Alex Palmer. He's as good as Carl Griffiths, in my opinion. He's a player, I think, he's got a year left on his contract. We should be moving heaven and earth to get him to commit to a longer deal. We should be moving heaven and earth. I've now realised the value of having your own keeper, because next season, championship or not, we start with Lucas Jensen, we start with Pordy O'Connor, we start with Sean Rowan, who knows, Alex Mitchell, Adam Jackson. They all know each other. Consistency is king. Consistency is king, and consistency is something that we've seen now from a couple of games from Jovan Mikama. And we're 40 minutes in. We've got a Carlisle preview to do really quickly. It's ridiculous. We thought it was going to be a quick one. We've got to talk about Jovan. For me, Jovan is the example of something that we have alluded to with Danny Mandroyu, potentially Jack Moylan, potentially Ted Bishop, potentially Lucas Jensen. He is the epitome of a player who is showing signs of improvement under Michael Scabala. Now, we expect Jovan to improve because he's a young lad. We've said on this podcast time and time again, and I'll stand by it, probably not starting League One quality at the moment, but he's got better and better. When he came on yesterday, I thought he's going to be a handful. When he came on the games in October, September, I thought, well, we haven't really got anyone else we can bring on, have we? It didn't feel like that when he came on yesterday, but what an impact. It was a Habergham against Torquay moment. It was persistence, though. Let's not get carried away in the fact we scored the goal, we won the game. It's easy to get carried away in the moment. When you look at the football involved in that moment, first of all, great little clip down from Sean Rowan, somebody that people told me yesterday
Sean Rowan's
the strongest game.
Signature pass.
Yeah,
it is. Down the line.
Yep, and it works. It works. And I thought he was excellent, by the way, yesterday. In defence, I thought that he struggled a little bit in the first half because those wide areas were really closed down quite tight. And when you're trying to find a pass to Rico Hackett, but Rico Hackett's marked out, Joey, it's not easy. But anyway, Jovan then battles Omar Beckles, who has played Football League for Shrewsbury. He's played for Crewe. You know, he's an experienced, big, strong centre-half. He's fouled. He is fouled.
He's fouled,
yeah. Yeah, and I wouldn't lose sleep over it because the referee, I thought, had a good game. He let things go. He's fouled. He shows the presence of mind then to press again, and that's the key. He gets up, he presses again. He presses their boy, again, whose name escapes me. I know he's called Jordan. He was from Jordan Brown, that's it. I should know that, obviously, from Jordan Brown, who was at Lincoln. It should correlate. So Jordan Brown, he hesitates a bit too long, but it's that quick press. Now, we only saw that at the beginning of the season, really, from Ben House. Tyler Walker was pretty good at it in those first couple of games. I didn't expect to see it from Jovan, but he's come on, he's fresh legs. That's what he's brought on to do. He harasses, he presses. I don't think Jovan Mikama in September or October takes that shot on himself. If he does, I don't think he puts it through Omar Beckles' legs and into the back of the net. Huge, huge credit. Because when I'm thinking forward to next season, and we've spoken on here about Jovan going out on loan, but when I'm thinking forward to next season, I'm wondering, well, do you keep Jovan around? Because we've talked about profile of strikers. So do we have somebody who can come on, who's got pace, who's 6'5", 6'6", who's a real handful and is growing every game? None of the players that we've mentioned, Taylor, Walker, House, Draper, there's another one, can't think who it is. But a different profile again, isn't it? No, there wasn't another one. You mentioned Makama, actually, I think. So even you have thrown Makama into that first team conversation. Yeah.
And he's and in the last three games, he's put himself there. When he came in against Cambridge, he was really good. And it was showing signs of improvement after having a bit of time out of the limelight, to be honest, and out of the firing line. And let's not forget, I think the thing that, for me, because I think I've probably seen a glimpse of potential in Draven, maybe a little bit more than you have, I'd say. And that could have come back to bite me, of course. It wasn't always going to turn out this way because he has struggled at times. It was oddly, the Wolves under 21s game that made me kind of pick up and notice him a bit more because he started up top against them. And I thought, right, well, this will be a test here because he's playing against an age group team who you'd expect to be of a similar standard to him, basically. And if he plays at a similar standard, I expect that kind of cements it in my mind that he's not quite ready for first team football yet. And he bullied them. He was a step above Wolves under 21s that game. And again, it wasn't always polished, but I could see the potential. And then let's not forget, there were calls under Mark Kennedy for him to be given a chance in the first team after coming off the bench and having a few flashes here and there. He got his chance in the first team in a team that didn't have a lot of attacking outlet, playing up top on his own as well, and struggled. Not necessarily all his fault, but also he did make some poor decisions at times. He was very much thrown in the deep end, which definitely suggested that he wasn't quite ready to be that first team one striker. He's then, under Michael Skubala, been taken out of the limelight a little bit, has clearly improved, both in terms of tactical understanding, technical ability, use of his strengths, but also mentality. You've got to credit his mentality because he was getting criticised in that tough run. And to come out the other side, play with the confidence he's been playing with, I just think that just deserves so much credit. To the coaching staff, as well as much as Joven, came on against Cambridge, was brilliant, played against Bristol Rovers, started, was great, so much so that we didn't miss Ben House, so much so that Ben House was available yesterday and I expected Joven to start and I would have been fine with it. And he's come on and done exactly what he's been doing in those previous two games. And of course, the moment's magical. You mentioned that kind of high press and that aggressive press and that kind of relentlessness to close down. I think we started to see the building blocks of that ever since Michael Skubala came in, but it was bit part and different players got it at different times than others. For me, it's automatic now for everyone in the squad. But Joven, of course, fresh legs coming on in 88 minutes, whatever it was, and just epitomised that and got the rewards once again. So that's another goal that we've scored from winning the ball back high up the pitch. And that's just become a real fixture of our style. Now, we've kind of associated that with kind of doing it in the first 15 minutes. You know, we're starting games quickly, but the fact that he's come on and done it in the last minute as well. And then, of course, cue absolute pandemonium on 90 minutes. I lost my mind. I haven't celebrated more like that for such a long time.
I'm going to go as far as to say for a very brief moment, nothing's won and lost. I get that. For a very brief moment, I actually could have cried because I think Shrewsbury equalising against Oxford, it's like, well, Blackpool are losing, a draw's not a bad result. Us getting that goal, it was the first moment now where I thought, it's written in the stars, you know, just like it was in the National League. You know, this is our season. This is, for a moment, I was like, we are going to be Championship next season. Now, it's bold. You know, there's six games, there's eight games to go before we could get to Wembley. We're nine games away from playing matches against Loftus Road and at Carrow Road and at the City Ground. You know, we're nine matches away from that. And in January, for me, we felt nine years away from that. I mean, there was such a chasm, and it's the same players. Basically, all of this leads to me assuming that Michael Skubala is the footballing equivalent of Midas, King Midas, because everything King Midas touched turned to gold, which I think the story was that that's not a good thing because he couldn't eat. But everything Michael Skubala touches, every player Michael Skubala influences, turns to a better player. Curious or not that Jack Burrows doesn't seem to be getting much of a look in under Michael Skubala? I don't know. I don't want to be too negative. But we really need to move on. And I think that we've probably covered the outcome of the game at the beginning of the podcast where we were talking all about the playoffs. So, you know, if you missed it, rewind, start again. Brilliant. Any final thoughts, Chris, before we move on to me talking about McDonald's?
Just, yeah, a goal hasn't felt so important for such a long time. And I'm with you. I didn't get it at the moment. It was leaving because it was walking out from the ground because, unsurprisingly, I needed like my 15th piss of the afternoon. So I walked back to the car on my own. And yeah, it kind of just overcame me. And the same feeling that you got kind of in the moment the goal scored. Like, and then you settle yourself down after that, don't you? And you start to think a little bit more objectively, with confidence, but a bit more objectively. You think it's such a long way to go and kind of talk yourself out of it. But it was just that, it just felt, with the other results as well, that meant that we finished up with six, it just felt so significant. Like, but there's such a long way to go yet. But we've given ourselves the best possible opportunity.
The walk back to the car was interesting. And if I can fathom it out, Dad rang me, say, where are you? And then he left his phone attached. So our entire conversation all the way down the road was recorded. I haven't listened to it yet, but if the sound quality is decent and I can take any snippets away, I've got to take some of the things my dad said, because walking back to the car with him was like walking back with a 10-year-old who had just seen his favourite team win the league. I mean, he was genuinely a kid. Very interestingly, really, really quickly, we were talking about the last time a full Sinsel Bank witnessed a goal as important as that. And my shout was Colchester, I think, wasn't it? When we beat them 2-1 the year that we... Was it the... Do you know what? It can't have been. It can't have
was
been.
Was it FA Dons?
Yeah, but that was away. We were talking about Sinsel Bank. Jason Shackle's goal against MK Dons was big. Yeah, who did Luke Waterfall score against late on to win to beat them 2-1?
Wasn't that... That game, didn't Jeff Shackle and Waterfall? I think Waterfall came on as a sub specifically as to be a box threat off set pieces. I might be getting games mixed up.
I think I am, because we won 2-1, didn't we? And I thought it was a it was getting us towards a title. And I think I'm getting my seasons mixed up now, because we lost to Colchester on the final day of the season, so it can't possibly have been that. I'm just looking through. It wasn't. It was a different season. That must have been for securing a playoff place. But it was still, at Sinsel Bank, still probably that game, because obviously everything petered out a little bit. Mark O'Hara, Yeovil, maybe. Anyway, let's move on. We will go to, by the way, I had some Burger Kings while I was away on my holiday, and they were absolutely phenomenal. But I did manage to squeeze in a quarter pounder with cheese, which everybody knows is my favourite, even though this advert is significantly quieter than the rest of the audio. So take a snooze while I try and sell you at McDonald's. But when we come back, we're going to go straight into Charlie, not literally, chatting about the Carlisle game with Carlisle United fan and Real EFL journalist, senior editor and all-round good bloke, Ivan Newsome.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Stacey West YouTube channel and to another preview. Looking ahead this time to Carlisle United on Easter Monday. Now, normally, as you are aware, we like to get opposition fans on for these previews. We struggled this time to find a Carlisle fan that would actually be able to talk some good, proper analysis of their club. We have a Carlisle fan in Ivan here from the Real EFL. Ivan, how are we doing, mate?
I'm absolutely buzzing after yesterday beating Peterborough. I think that was my ninth away game of the year, first win. And what style to do it in? John Mellish, the versatile centre-back, centre-mid, former striker with a hat-trick, Two of them being worldies, but it was just great day out. And yeah, I didn't have much hope going into it. And then to come away 3-1 winners, absolutely great day. But my voice, sorry to those who, if they recognise my voice from the podcast, it's a bit, probably a bit deeper and a bit more hoarse today, just because, let's just say a lot of singing. And
just because you finally hit puberty.
Yeah. But I am older than you, so I'm not going to have that.
Yeah, but my hairline's older than... Oh, wait, no. That doesn't help me. Yeah. I guess the perfect place, if you like, to start is yesterday. And for the record, I'm going to echo the thoughts on The Voice. If any of you have watched the monthly show, this might go out before the monthly show. The monthly show as well, which I've literally just recorded. I am quite clearly losing my voice, but that's what happens when Jovan Mikama scores a last-minute winner. I think yesterday was probably the best place to kind of start. What an impressive victory against Peterborough. I mean, that victory, from what I can tell, and I'm not the best mathematician, but from what I can tell, that victory does mean that you can't go down on Monday, if I'm not mistaken.
I think we can. I think if we lose and Burton and Cambridge both win, we'd be 16 points off with five games to go. So we can go down on Monday.
You can. Yes, you can. So, yeah, because it's 13 points to Burton already. So, Burton, I think Burton are at home to Barnsley, though. So not exactly the most like. But look, we're talking about what is effectively an inevitability, isn't it? But I guess we'll start with that, Peterborough. How much out of the blue did that come? Have performances picked up recently, or was that just a shock result?
I mean, you look at how we played against Stevenage, and I think Simo said it in his post-match interview, we were really good for 70 minutes against Stevenage and then blew it away in the last, not even the last 20, the last 10-odd, letting in that last-minute goal. I was saying I wasn't at that game, following it on Twitter, and we hadn't even tweeted that we let the second goal in. It was just full time. And I saw it was 2-0. I was like, oh, that's good. I think the problem is, like, I think we put in some really good performances in the second half of the season. We've hardly anything to show for it. We've won six games all season. It's no lie that we struggled to win games. And there's been some good performances there. I thought even against Charlton a couple of weeks back, we were really good. Apart from Sam Lavelle making a mistake late on, we've put in some really good performances. I just think is that winning that we struggled. I think it was great yesterday. We've taken our chances. I think our first three shots on target all went in, which doesn't usually happen. So I think a good performance that brought 3 points was definitely due. Because I think we've won, three times now in 2024, but they've all been quite spaced out. I was just great yesterday. But I mean, we'll probably go on to this later, but I'm not 100% sure if we'll be able to back that up. But it's a lot of positives for next season, at least, from that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Ivan. Thank you, Charlie. Now, what I would say, I have lived Ivan's pain. We have a group chat on the kind of the management of the Real EFL, and I have lived Ivan's pain all season. And all of a sudden, they've got this glimmer of hope, which will be extinguished very, very soon, that they might stay up by beating Peterborough. So he's going to be on the crest of a wave. I'm not so sure that he's going to be feeling the same after April Fool's Day. It may be us left looking like April Fools, but with the fact that we are on about 58 minutes. Chris, what do you think of our game against Carlisle?
Well, when I saw the result that they beat Peterborough on Friday, obviously, as I imagine a lot of Lincoln City supporters were a little bit less confident about this as I was going into it, thinking, I was going into this thinking, I want to beat Orient. If we can get through this, it's massive, but a point's okay because we're going to beat Carlisle. Bearing in mind that they also scored two goals and went 2-0 up against Stevenage last weekend as well. You think, oh, bloody hell, they're starting to turn it a little bit here. And of course, a great result for them yesterday against Peterborough. Good for us, really, because it's always fun to see Peterborough lose another cup final. But to be honest, They scored three goals. John Mellish scored three goals, three low XG goals, really good finishes. But looking at statistics over the season, recent games, and specifically yesterday, not yesterday, well, it was yesterday, wasn't it? Not totally concerned, to be honest, as much as I was at full time. Biggest statistic that stood out to me is, and this isn't just against Peterborough, it's in their last few games, is touches in the box. So they had 15 touches in the box against Peterborough, which is pretty good. Peterborough had 27 touches in the box, 22 shots, only three on target, which was Peterborough's biggest issue. But Carlisle allowed 27 touches in their box. In their previous eight games, 27, 20, 18, 33, 30, 19, 22 and 26. So averaging in the last 10 games, 24 touches in the box against them. Now, a team that has the highest average touches in the box over the season is Peterborough with 22. There's only two teams in the league that averages higher than 20. So Carlisle, against everybody, on average, are conceding territory in their own box more than the best team achieve on average over the season. So they are conceding to so much territory and so much threat in their own area. And I just think that continued yesterday against Peterborough, even though Peterborough didn't take their chances. So I just think it was a good result for them and probably an improved performance overall against a half-decent side. But with the run that we're on, the confidence we have, I'm feeling okay about this one.
Now, I find it, I'm not going to say I find it frustrating because that's not the case at all. But when I look at the Carlisle side, I actually think they should be better than they are. Alfie McAlmont, I think, was a Leeds youngster, came off the bench. Quite liked him. Was he the Leeds? He was the Leeds boy, wasn't he?
He was a Leeds, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, quite liked him. Luke Armstrong was... Do you know what? I actually think flash in the pan. I mean, he had a great season for Harrogate last season, but it was a one-off 20-goal season. And he's moved to Carlisle, big money after his Wrexham move collapsed. Not entirely convinced. Dylan McGeoch, I don't know how it's pronounced. It's Scottish. I always struggle. He's a real Jonah because he was with Forest Green last season when they went down, finished bottom, and he looks like doing the same thing again. So I think that could be pretty big. Sam Lavelle is a decent centre-half. But I'm with you. They've had a couple of really good results because the 2-2 draw against Stevenage, let's not kid ourselves, in the context of Carlisle United season, is a really good result. We don't traditionally do well up there, but since the turn of the century, we have done. We've won 4-1, I think. We won 2-0 when Mark Bailey scored from the halfway line. I think we won there under Danny and Nicky, and then we went the next year when we'd already secured promotion and we lost 1-0. I think Mike Jones was sent off 1 year when we won 1-0 and then scored against us, and Jason Shackle was sent off as we lost 1-0, which was strange. But yeah, aside from these two results, I mean, before that, lost to Shrewsbury, lost to Barnsley, lost to Charlton, lost to Reading, beat Burton, lost to Bristol, lost to Cambridge, lost to Portsmouth, lost to Orient. You go on and on and on. They lose games. They're going down. It's futile. Their recent fight is futile. There's no great escape on here. It's the type of game that traditionally Lincoln City struggle in. It's the type of game that I don't think a Michael Scabala side struggles in, personally. Also, usually you go up to Carlisle I keep talking about context, but if this game's played in January, it's very different because they can shut up shop, they can go for a point, it'd be a good point. Point's no good for them at this point of the season. They've got to try and win the game. They have to. Because if they draw it, it's just, you know, they could be relegated, I think, on the back of a draw if results go against them. So they've got to try and win it. So a team that are not good at attacking, that already concede chances, coming and trying to win a game. Yeah, I think it plays into our hands. I'm not going to be overly confident and start saying things like we're definitely going to win. I have this horrible feeling that Jack Diamond has something to say on the game. I'm not sure that he's played all that much for them. And I really like Dan Butterworth. He was a player that I would like to have seen us sign back in January or back in last summer when he left Blackburn for free. But alas, I cannot particularly see this going any other way than a Lincoln City win. Yeah, just a quick one before we go on. Have you renewed your season ticket yet?
I have, yes. I did it on the very day that I was they first went on sale. Have you?
Because, yeah, I have. But the day, is it it's this week, isn't it? Is it Tuesday?
It is soon. I've seen a few bits and bobs coming from the club because there's been like a almost like an hourly update of how many thousands they've sold, which has been quite entertaining. But I know it's definitely coming up soon.
Do you think that people should be getting a little bit excited about the fact that they could be buying a season ticket at £399 to watch? I mean, that's the renewal price, not a new price, obviously, but to watch QPR and possibly Leicester the way they're falling away, and Norwich and Blackburn and Stoke, and pretty exciting. I mean, it's, you know, it's a bit of a gamble, isn't it? Okay, you're going to renew, you know, you're going to renew anyway, and we've had 5,000 or whatever renewals, but could be quite quite important. And a quick question, and I don't want to compromise you if you're on the supporters board or not, but also, when the second window opens, if we've secured promotion to the Championship, I wonder if the club might think, well, I'll stick an extra £25 on that then.
I don't think the club would do that. But yeah, no comment officially. I think £399 is pretty damn good value for League One. But it's ridiculous value for Championship, isn't it?
Yeah.
Works about £17 a game, I think, doesn't it, for an adult over the 23 games? So that's fantastic value for League One. And it's just, yeah, mental value for the Championship, which we have a very real opportunity to get to.
Yeah, we do indeed. Well, let's analyse that. What about the other fixtures, Chris? Because there's some interesting fixtures, I think, is there not, on Easter Monday? You've got Blackpool hosting Wickham, which, okay, Wickham don't have a lot to play for, but it's tough. Yeah, and they are in the EFL Trophy final, Wickham, next week, so they're probably going to want to carry some momentum into that. Fleetwood go to Oxford. You know, Fleetwood have got to win that game, otherwise they too look like they're doomed. I think they are anyway. So they're too interesting. And Stevenage at Charlton, which, yeah, it's not a derby, but it's probably the closest thing Stevenage to have. You know, it's close thing to a derby, isn't it? Stevenage heading down to Charlton. And then us at Carlisle. Are we cementing our place in the playoffs?
I think we can create a gap. I think we could create a gap. Yeah, I do. I can't see Stevenage beating Charlton at all. Charlton are a far better team than Stevenage are. Stevenage will be good at keeping it tight. But like you said, I just don't think they've got enough to beat. Now, if they Stevenage are exactly the sort of team that a Michael Appleton Charlton Athletic could get beat by. But Nathan Jones has created a solidity at Charlton that was previously unseen at the start of this season. So and Charlton are far better in attacking and going forward than the Stevenage are. So at worst, it's going to be a point for Charlton there. Blackpool. So when Ben and I chatted about this on Thursday, we kind of predicted or loosely predicted the run-ins of each of the team. And we said, you have to think that Oxford are going to pick up 3 points from their three games, their next three games, because they're playing against teams that, in terms of the table, you'd expect them to win. But also, they haven't won three games in a row since Liam Manning left them at the start, midway through the season, and they drew against Shrewsbury on Friday, so it's not going to be easy for them. But I think you expect them to definitely get at least 3 points out of the next two games. And yeah, Blackpool against Wickham. Wickham are solid, aren't they? Like you say, Blackpool have lost Jordan Rhodes, which is big. So I think that the biggest benefit here is even if not all these results go our way, I can't see all three of them winning. And I can see us getting 3 points. So that just gives us a buffer against at least someone. Just keep doing that for the rest of the season. Thing is, all we have to do now, which is such a privilege, is we've got to do is match everyone else's results. We haven't even got to bet them anymore.
Last 10 games form table. So look, we know we're doing well. That's fine. We are joint top of that, obviously, with Portsmouth. So we're actually showing title winning form right now, which is awesome considering we dad didn't even have a central midfield. But I'm looking at the teams that are around us and thinking, how does that kind of go across? How does that transpose? Blackpool are 11th in the last 10 games, form table, not great. Oxford are 15th. Stevenage are 19th. And I just, you know, The slight concern is that Barnsley are fourth, Peterborough are seventh. If we do make the playoffs, it's a different conversation. And the likelihood is, if we do make the playoffs, we will play whichever of those teams has missed out on automatic promotion, which, you know, Bolton or Derby my money is probably on Bolton, and Bolton know how to do a job on you. It would be really tough. But in terms of Easter Monday, again, you look at the team, you look at Oxford, who, okay, Fleetwood are in their bottom, their 20th in the form table. Stevenage, Charlton for me, Charlton are 8th, Stevenage are 19th. I can see Charlton winning that game, and that puts paid, I think, to Stevenage's lingering playoff hopes. And, you know, Blackpool are 11th, Wickham are 5th in the form table. That's a tough game. And whilst we looked at Blackpool and said, well, they've got a good opportunity here to kick on and do something, actually, I've got a sneaky feeling that they too may well be ruling themselves out of that playoff push by Easter Monday. I think it's a two-horse race between us and Oxford. And in that case, it all comes down to 2 weeks on Tuesday, really, doesn't it?
It does. It certainly does, or it could. But again, without getting carried away, best case scenario is if form continues, we win on Monday, Oxford don't, that creates a buffer. Wouldn't it be absolutely fantastic if we could go to Oxford on Tuesday with a 3 or more point gap, because we've got a better goal difference, and then it doesn't matter as much, obviously. And then if you go there and you do win, then you almost guaranteed yourself a playoff spot.
Well, by the way, before they play us on the Saturday, they play Peterborough, and on the Friday they play Stevenage.
Yeah,
so you know, I mean Stevenage, I think by that point will be out of it anyway, so I don't think that's a game. I think they'll be out of it, so I don't think that's the sort of game that we look at. I think that must have been picked for telly, because that's Friday the 19th of April rather than the 20th. Yeah, well, that's disappointing for them, isn't it? They could have picked Lincoln to be on telly. Right, we've gone over. Of course, we've gone over. It's so easy to talk about Lincoln. And I would love to, do you know what? I'd love to have done, while we were talking about Leighton Orient, I wanted to talk about Pádraig O'Connor, you know, who people were saying shouldn't be coming back into the side on New Year's Day, and he's now earning Warrior status. I wanted to talk about Alex Mitchell, that over Christmas I said it doesn't really matter. You know, I like Alex Mitchell, but if he goes back to Millwall, you know, we've got the profile of player to cover that. Now I look at Alex Mitchell and think, you know, I want that boy in our team next season, because of, you know, I know it's not just the passion and the fact he gets it. You know, they slotted in. I wanted to talk more about Sean Rowan. Do you know what I mean? I want to talk about everybody. I don't want to wax lyrical about Lincoln City day and night. I even walked up to Fee this morning and walked into the bathroom. She was getting ready to go out. And I'm like, do you know, this is our longest unbeaten run since. And she just looked at me and shook her head. I want to talk about Lincoln all the time. But we can't. So, ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls, this has been the Stacey West podcast. We have been talking at you for a phenomenally long time. The halfway advert came in after 50 minutes, which is, you know, it's meant to be a mid-roll. But it has been a pleasure. It's been nice to be back, I must admit. And the sunshine being out today might not be as warm as Mauritius, but it's as welcoming as Mauritius. But at Sincel Bank at the moment, the sun is always shining. It always feels like it's 30 degrees. And we are now looking forward to the month of April, a month which could be a defining month, not just in the season, but in the history of Lincoln City. We are in with a real chance of making it to the second tier for the first time since we were relegated in what I think was 1960-61. I mean, that is 62, 63 years. Very few people will remember the last time we were there. But I'll tell you something, if we get there, it'll be something that those of us who experience it will remember for the rest of our lives. I have been Gary Hutchinson. He has been Chris Lamming. And all that remains to be said is up the Imps.
Up the Imps.
It's the 90th minute. And all your mates around watching the Imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.